25 minutes past 7. Well, joining us now on the line, well-known political analyst Ibrahim Fakir, and we get his perspective on this whole Al-Qaeda being alive and well allegation by Devet Podkhita in the Daily Maverick article that was released yesterday. Ibrahim, jazakumullah for your time, much appreciated. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and jazakumullah for having me.
Your thoughts on this issue, your overall thoughts, Ibrahim?
Well, I don't know. Look, I mean, one can't poo-poo the idea just that it doesn't exist, or you can't confirm that it does exist, because, you know what, none of us actually knows. The trouble is, with this particular article, is that there's just so many red herrings hanging all over this article, because it's factually very weak. There's very little in terms of journalistic conventions which justify why an article like this would even be published. So, for instance, let me just give you two examples. Mm. One, you notice there are no sources in this article. Not even the typically famous unnamed or sources. Right? So there's no sources, number one. Number two, there's just a set of logical facts which don't actually add up. So for instance, let me pose this to you. All these little supposed Al-Qaeda training cells, surely they would require some kind of supply chains to supply them with food, with supplies, with water. You know, when these guys are training, they can't be shooting blanks, so someone's got to be taking these bullets to them, right? There must be instructors going in and out, unless the instructor that is with them is the guy who does both fitness, survival, making a bomb, shooting, everything, all in one. And so the article points out nothing of those kind of things. Mm. Apart from that, there are no one is prepared as an eyewitness source to corroborate any of the kind of facts that the guy puts out, apparently. And then they found one expert, apparently, who was prepared to give comment on this article. And most disturbing, of course, was that this piece of work apparently took 1 year's worth of investigation. Now, I can only wish that my employer would give me one year's worth of time to churn out this kind of work. I mean, it would be a lovely holiday. Looks like sheltered employment is alive and well.
I saw your tweet yesterday. You speak about this one analyst who was willing to comment, and that's Hussein Solomons. And your tweet yesterday made a very interesting point, that Solomons seems to be the kind of guy who comes to a conclusion and then tries to find the evidence to fit that conclusion, and if he can't find it, then maybe just try and manufacture it.
Well, that's precisely what it sounds to me like. I mean, you know, usually the convention, like I'm saying to you, you know, I don't want to be the one who's saying, listen, this stuff can't exist. It's not real. Because, look, I simply don't know. Nor does anyone else. So the reality is, come with us, come to us with a report, come to us with a set of facts, come with us with investigative journalism, which actually draws some of the dots together. Now, I can imagine that, you know, doing investigative journalism of this kind of in this kind of arena, in this kind of area, whether it be intelligence-driven or otherwise, is incredibly murky, because, you know, you can't always corroborate the facts. You can't always have eyewitness accounts. You can't always have that kind of stuff. But come on, they're saying that there's a year's worth of work. They're saying that the intelligence agencies gathered a whole bunch of information. Surely, that must give you enough information to be able to join the dots together. Now, they go to this authority, so-called authority, and even he can't actually join the dots together. And all he comes up is with these sort of spurious allegations that this is how Muslims behave. And because they behave in this way, it's probably likely, on balance, that's what we're supposed to read into this, that this is possibly true. So it does sound to me, as you're saying, I said in my tweets, as if the guy reached this conclusion, and now he couldn't find any of the facts, any of the dots to join together, so he simply made them up. Number one. Number two, he expects, in my view, in the way in which he's quoted in the article, that we must all just simply believe him because he's apparently the recognized expert on this area. Now, how you become an expert on a particular subject area is beyond me, and why people even call themselves experts I don't know, surely that's something for other people to refer to you as. I'm not sure you go around calling yourself an expert. So it was, on balance, Maulana, a very weak article, an article which seems to me, in my view, particularly in the way in which they go about sort of providing this family or character sketch, almost kind of racial profiling. And you know, it's a very, very, there's a very dangerous subtext when you read this article, because the guy starts off, and I'm not sure if many people notice this, he starts off saying, you had the Burumakh prosecution, you had this, you had that, but it's like these guys appear to be getting away. So there's a very subtle racist subtext, there's a very subtle subtext of kind of profiling, racially profiling this particular family, and in particular the two brothers that they mention by name in the article. And that for me is very disturbing, particularly for journalists who claim to want to have progressive credentials.
Now, Ibrahim, if we just broaden the discussions for a moment, obviously Devet Podgieter would have had to get this article approved by his editor. Then Eyewitness News ran it as its lead story. Surely there's an editor in the newsroom there. The Star newspaper in its afternoon edition put the story on its front page. Surely there's editors and sub-editors. Why didn't they come to this conclusion and say, look, this is a poor piece of journalism, this is poor, you know, standards, and we're not going to give it prominence because the implications could be quite disastrous.
There's three points to make about this. One is that there's been a serious juniorization in the newsrooms. I'm not sure you have the kind of oversight, you have the kind of supervision, you have the kind of fact-checking, and you have the kind of thinking going on that you might expect to happen in newsrooms, which is why often you would find quite spurious things making it onto the front page of a newspaper. I mean, sometimes you look at a headline, you read the article, and there's not even a relationship between the content of an article and the headline that's given to it. And this has happened in some extremely prominent and wide circulating newspapers. I think that's the first practical point to make. The second is that I don't think we can run away from the fact that there is this racial profiling and this so-called Islamophobia going on. I mean, it's sensational. It sounds great. In the wake of this Gupta scandal, it's a lovely stick to take and try and beat the security establishment of the country and show them up once again for how these natives, in inverted commas, can't actually run the state. So, you know, here's this whole thing going on under their noses. They don't know. And undoubtedly, thirdly, I don't think you can run away from the fact that this is, in fact, racial profiling and Islamophobia. Let's just put it out there. That's what it's about. Now, I can't imagine that you have an intelligence agency which is so willy-nilly that is prepared to overlook this kind of thing. Now, I'm the first to prepare to admit that we've got weak, so often have weak intelligence structures on the ground, but they are not so poor. And the reality is that these guys are susceptible to manipulation for profit. They are susceptible for manipulation to be used by powerful and entrenched interests in the society. They are not, in fact, I said, to simply allowing, things of this, what they, in inverted commas, terrorist things to go on. Our intelligence structures are not that weak. They may be corrupt, they may be problematic, they may be used for political factional battles, but they don't overlook things of this nature. Let me give you a couple examples. Remember there was a pipe bomb, incidents of pipe bombs, and PAGAD, this big fear in the Western Cape. The intelligence agencies were very quick to kind of stymie that. Think World Cup 2010, the kind of Burumakh trial which eventually emerged, or the security threats and how the World Cup 2010 was secured overall. That doesn't take a willy-nilly chump change intelligence kind of establishment. You think of the way in which these arms caches have been found, and these Burumakh operatives were found. That takes some serious kind of intelligence work. So these guys are susceptible to corruption. They're susceptible to manipulation by powerful entrenched political interests in the society. But they are not so foolhardy to allow a society to be put at risk in the way in which this article suggests it does. So, you know, there's four things going on. There's the racist profiling and setting up of the Muslim bogeyman. I don't think we must run away from that idea. We must face it square on. That's what this guy has done in this article, and that's what other news media have done by perpetuating it. It's been susceptible. The practical problem is that there's serious weaknesses and juniorization in newsrooms where the proper oversight, fact-checking, and thinking is not, in fact, going on. And thirdly, I think there is this sort of falling into this trap of racist, sort of establishing the state of the natives can't be able to actually run their affairs properly.
Mm. Finally, Ibrahim, a question I want to put to you with regards to the Muslim community. One gets the impression that there seems to be two opinions on how best to tackle this article. There are those who say, you know, it's a rehash, it hasn't brought anything new to light, it's weak journalism, ignore it and don't give it the oxygen that the author wants it to have to be able to get prominence. There are others who say that even though it may be an article that's weak and it's rehashed and doesn't have any evidence to back up the claims, yet it has far-reaching implications for the Muslim community in South Africa, even the migrant Muslim communities, and therefore we have to react very strongly. What are your thoughts on these two differing opinions on how to approach the situation?
Well, we can't bury our heads in the sand and think as if this thing doesn't exist. I mean, you've rightly pointed out, it's not just in Daily Maverick. Now, the Daily Maverick's readership, because it's an online newspaper, is not terribly well known, maybe small. The trouble is that this has been picked up by Eyewitness News, the Star's made it its front page headlines, and everyone talks about it. That's number one. Number two, there are practical consequences which emerges out of this, and if one reads the article carefully, there's also the subtext that this guy's asking the American authorities and South African authorities to start acting on the way in which these guys will now appear on a watch list or blacklist, their accounts will be frozen, they aren't able to transfer monies, and this has an impact not just on the two brothers and the Dockard family mentioned in the article, but in the wider Muslim community. I mean, what happens to the distribution of our zakat, lillah, sadaqa and everything else? I mean, you know, we have the right to be able to distribute this in areas and in places and in ways in which we want without any other authorities telling us how and how this should be done. So it has that practical implication. And thirdly, we can't allow this kind of stereotyping, profiling of an entire community, but also more importantly, a prominent family within the community to be used in this way. So there are three very good reasons why you can't ignore this article because it is there. And fourthly, if we have an interest in a vital democracy in which there's good information, in which there's good debate, then we must hold the Daily Maverick and we must hold the other news media to much higher standards of public debate, of the kind of information they put out there. And most egregiously, we can't allow them to get away with this kind of stereotyping and racial profiling. Now, to the extent that we also want to contribute to issues of public safety, if there's any veracity and truth to this, you must give us the information so that we as a community, both as a self-policing community, but also so that the intelligence structures of the state know that there's vital information that they need to follow up on or at least look into. And the reality is that this article fails to test on all five of these things.
All right. Ibrahim, jazakumullah for your very interesting perspective this morning. Much appreciated.
Shukran. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. That was Ibrahim Fakir. And he is a well-known political analyst. Some very, very interesting perspective he's given this morning. He's saying that obviously you can't say that there are Al-Qaeda terrorists operating in South Africa. Neither can you deny it. We don't know. However, this article is highly problematic. And he went on to explain in great detail. And I thought it was a very interesting analysis. He speaks about the many red herrings hanging all over the article. He speaks about poor journalistic standards, not meeting conventional standards. He gave a few examples. No sources are quoted. The so-called facts don't add up. There isn't a logical link between the different arguments. There's no one prepared to put their name to that article to corroborate what the author is saying, except Hussein Solomons. And even Solomons can't join the dot. He's saying that, believe me, because I know that this is how Muslims operate. And on the balance of probabilities, this should be true. And he says that the author says it took 1 year of work an investigation. After 1 year of investigation, if this is what you can produce, that it means that you are, were pretty much on a holiday for about 1 year. And he speaks here about character sketching of the family, which borders on racial profiling. This is very, very concerning. And he says there's a subtle racist subtext where they talk initially that, you know, the Buramakh were taken to task and these, this one and that one, but these Indians or these Muslims are not being taken to task. And why are all the media houses picking up on this and running it as a main story when it's poor journalism? Well, because juniorization in the newsrooms. You don't have senior wise heads in the newsrooms that can make the distinction between sensational reporting and responsible reporting. And he says that this issue of the Muslim bogeyman, we can't deny it. There is problems as far as Islamophobia, racial profiling is concerned within newsrooms. It's not something we can deny. And he says our intelligence authorities have their problems. They corrupt, they are used for internal factional fights within the ANC, but they're not so foolhardy that they will allow terrorist activities to carry on in the country and put the whole country at risk. We see that they can get their act in order on serious issues like ahead of the World Cup. And he says, as a Muslim community, we can't ignore the article. There are practical consequences. They want to place families on blacklists, etc. That will have implications in terms of how we distribute our zakah and our charity, etc. And as a community, we must hold media to higher standards. We can't allow them to get away with such profiling. And if they want to have a debate, they must have a debate that runs according to reasonable and acceptable standards. 19 minutes to 8, we go for the traffic, and after that a break, and then we return with the weekly Africa Report. Stay tuned.